From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. For the news and views you can't hear anywhere else, it's the Steve Hook Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Well, all right. Hello there, and welcome to the Steve Hook Show. I am Steve Hook on TNT Radio. It's so good to have you with us. We've got a big guest today. Gregory Wrightstone is going to be joining us a little bit in just a little bit. He is the executive director of CO2 Coalition, CO2Coalition.org, and you can check out that organization. We're going to chat with Greg about global warming, more specifically AGW, anthropogenic global warming. What does that mean? That means human causation is what it means. And it's really it's a great way to separate you from your dollars and your liberty. And we're going to talk about that. I don't think anybody alive would ever argue that climate change happens. It's happening all the time. It's been happening since long before human beings ever stepped foot on the planet. And it's going to continue to happen long after we are all just space dust. It's going to continue to happen. And Gregory Wrightstone will walk us through some of the facts that are conveniently left out of the media reporting on that. So we'll look forward to chatting with him about that. This is a subject that I have followed up on for a long time because I see it for what it is, a scam. Anytime somebody says the consensus in science, you know they're not talking about science anymore. They're talking about a narrative and an agenda, because science does not follow a consensus. Science is trial and error and question everything and then re-question it and then question it again. That's how science works. I mean, if Galileo had stuck with the consensus, you know, I mean, just think about it. But at any rate, so that's going to be an interesting topic to get into. Also today, boy, I tell you, it didn't take long. Here in the States, of course, we had a deadly shooting in a school outside of Nashville, Tennessee yesterday. We discussed it yesterday with Chief Patrick Jordan, retired LA Deputy Sheriff's Chief. And today, as I predicted yesterday, I said it's not going to take long before they spin this narrative. And of course, it didn't take long at all, because President Biden came out, and after he joked about ice cream and who the good-looking kids were in the room, he then immediately pivoted to gun laws. We need more gun regulation. Does anybody think that any law would have prevented this girl from killing six people? I mean, it's absurd on its face. No gun laws. When they say common sense gun laws, ladies and gentlemen, what they mean is gun confiscation. We know what they mean. But not only did Biden immediately go to politics on this, the media and the activist, which are really one and the same, started pivoting and saying, and we'll remember that Chief Jordan said yesterday that there was some legislation passed in the Tennessee state legislature concerning trans activism inside public schools. And the Republican state legislature blocked all of that education from going on in public schools for kids. And why should it? Why should it? When you were in fourth grade, did you know who your teacher was sleeping with? Did you care? Was it ever brought up? Of course not. Of course not. But for some reason, these activists feel like they should push this on kids, and those who oppose them aren't really thinking about their kids. They're thinking about hate. That's the way they look at it. And it took no time at all before those folks started chiming in on the transgender, mentally ill woman that went into this school and shot people up. A trans rights activist group inside Tennessee came out and said she felt this was the only way for her voice to be heard. Well, it was heard. It was heard loud and clear. And for anyone who thinks that it did their cause good, you're deluding yourselves. You're deluding yourselves. It didn't do anybody's cause any good. It left three children and three adults dead And it also left a shooter dead. And to try and pivot and shift the blame is it's moral bankruptcy is what it is. It's moral bankruptcy. We know what happened. We now are learning that Audrey Hale had severe mental issues. Her parents were concerned enough to say that you need to give up all your guns, Audrey. She lied and said she did. But what she had actually done was secretly squirrel her guns around the house in hiding places, waiting for her opportune time to carry out the act that she carried out. And now we're being told that it's the real problem here isn't her mental illness. It isn't her rage. It's the fact that the trans movement isn't getting the love it deserves. Or it's guns. They never, ever, ever blame the actual perpetrator on this thing unless the perpetrator fits their narrative. And I'm telling you, if you go on CNN and stuff and look for this story, you're going to see the way they've positioned it. It's always like, well, will this open up our dialogue? Will people start to take these people seriously now? I mean, just get over yourselves. Like I said, this is not the way to win friends and influence people. And then justifying it is utter BS. But that's a different story for a different day. But that's just what I'm watching right now, okay? Listen, we're going to take a breather in just a second, bring on my man, my man Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. But we want to know, you're listening to TNN right now, right? Of course you are. Well, if you think we're doing a good job, we'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think. Why not give us a like or a positive review or some comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter, or wherever you listen to TNT, and help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Your news when you need it.
They cover the important story.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, let's bring in my man Ruckus. According to witnesses testifying today before the House Select Subcommittee on the coronavirus pandemic, America's school children suffered unnecessary harm during the COVID-19 pandemic due to forced school closure decisions that lacked any solid scientific basis. This may seem like old hat, and of course that's obvious, but we heard about it today. And here joining me, TNT Radio News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. Hey, Ruckus, what's happening, brother?
Hey, Steve. I had the same thought as you. I was like, well, wait a minute. Isn't this the same thing that people were railing on about back at the beginning of all this garbage? Oh, that's right. But then we were told to sit down, shut up, or crazy conspiracy theorists. You're racist. Yeah. You voted for Trump. You lose your Facebook and your Twitter account. So now it's official. It's on the record. It's mainstream. It's glorious. The new normal is finally the old normal, and everything is coming to light, and it's going on record, and we're speaking to real experts, not the fake. We're not seeing the fake experts that they rolled out on TV to promote an agenda. This is the real deal. So I think it's awesome. But yes, this is why we do these committee things. So let's dig into this a little bit. We'll start with Virginia Gentles. She's the director of the Education Freedom Center at Independent Women's Forum. She told the subcommittee, quote, despite children being COVID's lowest risk demographic, American elementary and secondary students were shut out of schools for lengthy periods and really relegated to deplorable remote learning. Irresponsible school district leaders endangered children academically, emotionally, and physically by closing and refusing to open schools, decisions that led to devastating learning loss, mental health issues, developmental delays, and persistent discipline challenges, end quote. Witnesses presented a litany of data on the ill effects of children being deprived of learning, physical activity, and socialization due to school closures. Investigative journalist David Zweig cited studies showing their test scores in school districts with 100% remote instruction fell by three times as much as those who allowed in-person learning for most of the school year. Zweig said, quote, moreover, their research showed that disadvantaged students had disproportionate learning declines during the academic year, end quote. He noted that remote instruction was more likely to be used in schools with predominantly Black and Hispanic students, and that schools in high poverty areas spent more time in remote learning during the 2020 to 21 school year than other schools. Zweig said that students are also less likely to report abuse during the lockdowns because they no longer had a way to tell an adult what was happening to them. Of course, this affected their scores too. According to the 2022 National Assessment of Educational Progress, known as the Nation's Report Card, math and reading scores plummeted across the country. Gentles pointed out, quote, only 26% of eighth graders are proficient in math and 31% in reading nationwide. She said, as an October 2022 analysis by Harvard and Stanford University researchers found that the average U.S. public school student in grades 3 through 8 lost the equivalent of a half year of learning in math and a quarter of year in reading, end quote. And then plenty of witnesses also described increased psychological and behavioral problems in students returning to school after the pandemic. And then they rolled in an epidemiologist and physician to talk on how this was totally unnecessary, using science and evidence to show that the schools being closed was ridiculous. And then also the masking guidance from CDC and the 6-foot social distancing standard, all of it garbage. And look at what we have to deal with now. You can see the irreparable harms that caused, Steve.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. And you know what it points to, Ruckus, is it points to the politicization of everything, In fact, my guest today, Gregory Wrightstone, we're going to be talking about climate change. That's been politicized. I saw a video today of Randy Weingarten, head of the ATF or AFT, American Federation of Teachers, big teachers union gal. Everybody knows Randy. And she's as political as it comes. And she's calling for the outright ban of guns and the repeal of the Second Amendment. So this is what happens when these leftists get control. They take control of whether it's school board, teachers unions or whatever. And they immediately push for agendas. And this is just another example of that, because I guarantee you, you know who kept kids out of school? Teachers unions. Teachers unions kept kids out of schools. And also very blue state governors and mayors in big cities, blue cities. And it was predictable as the sunrise that this was going to lead to a catastrophic outcome. And so it has. And you know what you say about the Black kids and the Hispanic kids in the inner cities, that is absolutely spot on. A lot of these kids don't have computers at home, and they were really and truly screwed over by the very people that claim to represent them and want to help them. And I find it just sickening in every possible way. And to say this was all for the health of the students is just a bunch of BS, quite frankly. Well, that's where my head's at.
I know they were out there. I'm sure they were out there, but it was disproportionately not very well covered in the news, if not ignored and whitewashed. But I always found it curious when this was going on back in, when was this? Just a couple weeks ago, right? A few years ago when they did this crap. I was like, why am I seeing stories, Steve, you probably saw them too, of teachers and principals, school boards, superintendents, all these people coming forward who are in the education field insisting, oh my gosh, yeah, we have to do this. We have to shut down the schools. I would think that they were the ones who would know better. And we do know now in retrospect that they did know better, that what the harms this would do to the students. They know how important this whole system is and how fragile and everything depends on what they do. That's why they do what they do. They love doing what they do, even though they get paid like crappy wages. Teachers realize what an important role them and the whole school system plays in the lives of children and their families. Yeah. And, you know, to seriously just disrupt that and say, hey, yeah, you know what, let's just try something different. And then, you know, yeah, no wonder we didn't hear about it, because, you know, the mainstream narrative would.
Yeah. And you know what it is, Ruck, is power begets more power, with regards to stuff like this. So what the teachers' unions were looking for was, this is a great excuse to exercise our power. And then our demands. And then our demands, mind you. Now we're gonna shut the schools down. And now we're going to demand that we have all new air conditioners and new stuff put in there just to wield the power. And there was no scientific basis for it. It was all emotionally driven, like everything on the left is. It doesn't come from a place of science. It doesn't come from a place of facts or data. It comes from a place of power. And teachers' unions have far too much power. The Democratic Party has far too much power. And I think that this is just one more example of that. Power run amok is not good for anybody except for those seeking more and more power. It's when I saw this, Adam, I got to tell you, when you sent me this and I knew what we were going to discuss, I immediately flashed red because I was so angry about it. And I've been so angry about it for 2.5+ years. Thankfully, my daughters are adults now. They're long out of school. But I would have been at every single one of those board meetings. I'm very happy that I live in an area in New Jersey where our public school system is actually very, very good. But I also live in the brightest red part of the state of New Jersey. And it's not perfect by any stretch, but these big teachers' unions and big blue cities and big blue states have really done harm to our kids. And I won't forget it anytime soon.
Right on. I appreciate your analysis and input. Makes sense about the power tripping thing. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, brother. Well, listen, man, I appreciate you as always, Ruckus. And I guess we'll look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow, my brother.
That's right. We'll see you then, buddy.
All right, buddy. Take care. All right. There he goes. There goes Ruckus. Let's take a breather. We come back. Man, oh man, do I have a good guest for you today. Gregory Wrightstone is the executive director of the CO2 Coalition. You can find them at co2coalition.org. It's a great organization, quite frankly, because this kind of goes to what we were just talking about. It dispels the myth of AGW, anthropogenic global warming. And I look very forward to talking to Gregory Wrightstone because he is a geologist and his group has got dozens and dozens and dozens of PhDs involved with them. And we're going to chat with him on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Chris Smith.
Well, we're beginning to learn more about the impacts of COVID and all vaccines on the human body thanks to several embalmers across the world. Now, these funeral directors are now observing many large and abnormal clots inside the corpses they treat and are beginning to speak out, thankfully.
One of the main things for me was very early on in 2020 as a funeral director, I took a phone call, and this would have been about March time, from a guy called John. He said that he worked for a government-sponsored company, and that company, I believe, was called Pandemic Resilience. He started steering me almost immediately, and straight away this guy would insist this guy was COVID. And I kind of said, well, why? I've told you the circumstances. And he said, well, that we've been instructed that one person died from COVID in that facility. And this is a 350-bed facility, it's huge. So he said that we've been instructed to label every person that dies in that facility a COVID death. It was a joke.
Chris Smith on TNT Radio.
At SmileTrain, we envision a world where every child with a cleft has the opportunity for a healthy, happy life. Children with clefts often struggle to eat, to speak, even to breathe. Addressing every challenge often requires more than a single surgery. That's why SmileTrain empowers our medical partners to care for the whole patient and provide ongoing, comprehensive cleft care. Comprehensive cleft care includes speech services, life-saving feeding and nutrition programs, psychological counseling, orthodontics, dental care, diagnostic, and hearing services. SmileTrain supports these essential treatments for as long as each child needs to reach their full potential.
Visit SmileTrain.org to donate and change a child's life forever. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Our enemies don't fear us. Our allies don't respect us. And in terms of the economy,
blame Trump.
It's about time that Joe Biden went down to the border to see the chaos that he himself created.
Blame Trump.
Out of control inflation and violent crime.
to the dangerous border crisis and threat from China.
Blame Trump.
I am president of the United States of America. The buck stops with me.
Today's News Talk Radio.
We could sure use some
good news.
TNT.
All right. Welcome back to the Steve Hook Show. I am Steve Hook, and I'm very excited to welcome a first-time guest on the program. Gregory Wrightstone is the executive director of CO2 Coalition, and I welcome him to the show. Hello, Greg. How are you, sir?
Busy, busy, busy. You are interview number 10 for me today. So you're
wow.
The last of the day. Yeah. I broke a record. So this is everybody wants to talk about the National Science Teaching Association and us getting kicked out on our butts.
Yeah, I read your piece. And I'm glad that I'm the last because, as you know, the old adage is saving the best for last. So there you go. I got to tell you, I went on the website, and I would encourage everybody listening to check out the website, co2coalition.org. And while you're there, take that quiz. There's an interesting quiz that you guys have up on your website, Gregory. And I took it, and I'm happy to say I passed it. I got 100% right. And that's because this is a subject that has been near and dear to me for a long, long time, because I've always seen it as not only a massive global wealth redistribution scam, but a massive power grab and a stripping of liberty, individual liberty scam. I also read your piece about the headline of your latest is Shining a Light on Science Education's Dark Age. And it concerns that group you were just talking about, the National Scientific Teaching Association, Teachers Association, or Teaching Association. That's it, National Science Teaching Association. They're pushing the global warming hoax and saying that the science is settled and you better get with the program and agree with the consensus or you're out. Why don't you take it from there?
Well, let's just set the stage about what we're doing at the CO2 Coalition that led to this, because a group of our scientists were very concerned about the state of science education in America, and formed this. We'll be ready to launch in 2 or 3 weeks our new website, co2learningcenter.com, but we're not quite ready yet. But so this kind of preempted it. We went there to promote the teaching to their annual convention of the NSTA to promote our teaching materials. We have books, comic books that are written for children, and they're comic books done manga style. And we have videos we've created that are done anime style. The videos are available at CO2 Learning Center YouTube. They're really cool. Kids love them.
Okay.
And so we went there to promote this, but we learned that the National Science Teaching Association's climate policy was just horrific. And instead of teaching and promoting critical thinking and the scientific process, they were promoting groupthink, and they were promoting just a censorship of any dissenting science, and that's not what science is about.
Well, let me ask you this, Gregory: is carbon dioxide a pollutant?
Absolutely not. Our motto at the CO2 Coalition is: we love CO2, and so should you. If you look on the back of my truck, I've got a bumper sticker with it says, I heart CO2. I love CO2. And I haven't been keyed yet, but I might be. But no, it's not. But what we promote is again, critical thinking skills for students. And we promote the scientific method. And they're promoting consensus, groupthink, and mainly indoctrination into a climate agenda. They don't distinguish between climate science and political science. And it's not good. It's very, very bad at what they're doing. A consensus should have nothing to do with science, and consensus should have nothing to do with this climate policy. Michael Crichton, the famous author, he was also a medical doctor, you may not know, but Michael Crichton, he famously said, if it's science, it's not consensus. If it's consensus, it's not science. And then Dr. Richard Feynman, Nobel laureate physicist, he backed that up saying that drawing a blank on that on his quote, but it was I'd rather have now I've got it. It's a senior
member. I've got it. I've got it right here. It says, I would rather have questions that can't be answered than answers that can't be questioned.
Isn't that great? That's the crux of it, isn't it?
You know what? We've got to take a break, but when we come back, I want to drill down into this because they are pushing the consensus. They are pushing the group think, but to what end? Think about that. I know you've got a great answer. I bet I know what it is, but I want to hear it on the other side. We're joined today by Gregory Wrightstone of the CO2 Coalition. You're listening to The Steve Hook Show. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio News.
Hi, everybody.
So many crazy news stories going on right now.
Now, the news. Go.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. A U.S. aircraft carrier has arrived in South Korea for the first time in 6 months in a show of alliance after North Korea fired two short-range ballistic missiles that is said served as warnings to the two allies. Canada is extending a scaled-down version of its military mission in Iraq and the Middle East for another 2 years. Former President Trump has still not been indicted by a New York City grand jury that keeps investigating him over a hush money payment before the 2016 election to keep an affair quiet even though he denies having that affair.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back to the Steve Hook Show. We are joined today by Gregory Wrightstone. Greg is the executive director of the CO2 Coalition. Okay, Greg, before we left, I mentioned to what end? Why are they doing this? Why are they pushing this consensus? They're pushing a narrative, I assume, but what is your take?
You know, Stephen, I get asked that all the time by radio hosts. Basically, you're asking, why are they lying to us? Isn't that the question?
And yeah.
to be blunt, and we at the CO2 Coalition stick to the science and not the politics. It's easy to go into the politics. And so I'm going to throw it back on you. My answers to you is the same to every other host. You are just as qualified as I am, and every single one of your listeners is just as qualified as I am to say why they're doing it. It's my job as a scientist to provide you the facts, the science, and the data that says, okay, here's what they're telling you, and here's what the science really says. And you would come up, and your listeners could come up with a half dozen reasons of why they're doing it. You know, I've heard all sorts of things, global domination, destruction of the Western, you know, the capitalism, control, increased funding. I don't know. There's all kinds of things.
And none of those items are, by the way, mutually exclusive. It could be a little bit of all of that. It could just take a little bit of all of that and say, this is why we're doing it. And I hear you. You're a scientist. You don't want to get into the politics, but it's abundantly clear that politics is at play here. I mean, you'd have to be blind and living under a rock not to see that. I would ask you this, Gregory, because I know, and I'd be willing to bet, now this is the first time you and I have ever spoken, but I'd be willing to bet that you guys come under attack, and one of the attack lines against you guys, I would wager, and I don't know this to be sure, but I would wager, it is, those guys are all shills for big oil. Do I have that about right? Do they say that?
Oh, yeah, I get that all the time. And I can't discuss, obviously, our fundraising in detail at all, but I will tell you that we've probably got well more than 98% of our donors are small individuals. That's what 98% of our donors are that. What's surprising to me, I really thought going into this, I took over a little over a year ago as executive director. I thought that these, especially the independent energy companies, that they would want to fund us because we're promoting carbon dioxide. The fact of the matter is we get no funding. Well, I can't say, there might be some individuals that are, you know, donating money here and there, but we're not getting those large contributions.
Yeah,
companies.
It's not like BP or Exxon are writing you $1 million checks and saying, keep going, boys. I mean, that's not happening.
No, we're attacking BP and Exxon. We're exposing. You know, I mean, they've embraced this climate catastrophe narrative, the net zero narrative. We're going to go green. We're going to go, you know, wind energy and solar. And you know, they've embraced this carbon capture and sequestration, where they're going to capture CO2 in the atmosphere and pump it down wells and sequester it. Well, we think that's horrifically bad because, again, we believe carbon dioxide, we call it the miracle molecule. We believe it's hugely beneficial. It's not, we just believe it. We can prove it. We can prove that more CO2 is more beneficial to the Earth's ecosystems, to humanity. It's fueling plant growth. And the warmth that we're seeing, we're in a warming trend. It's hugely beneficial to what we're seeing. We've got lengthened growing seasons because the combination of more warmth and more CO2, we're breaking crop growth records year after year. We should celebrate that.
Yeah. Well, as I was looking through the website, and it really is a welcome, and you got a new one coming, but the old one's pretty good. And as I'm looking through the the leadership and the board of directors and all that, I just on a whim, I said, I'm going to count and see how many PhDs are in here. And you got damn near 70 PhDs, MDs. You're a geologist. These are some very, very smart men and women that follow the actual science, don't follow a consensus.
Yeah, we've got 120, a little over 120 members now. We're selective. We want to have some of the top scientists. You've got there are basic tenets if you want to be a member of the CO2 coalition that you need to abide by. The number one, there is no climate crisis. Number two, that CO2 is beneficial. And then these are top scientists that are well respected. And actually, we've got well more than 90 of people that have either PhDs or commensurate degrees. Because some of these, for example, we've got Jan Breslow, who is he's an MD and one of the top epidemiologists in the country. He's a member of the National Academy of Sciences. But that he doesn't have an actual, it's not called a PhD. We also have others that are economics, or we have some attorneys that are very well known. So they don't have a PhD, but they have a degree that's commensurate.
Smart cookies. Smart cookies. Let me, meteorologists, geologists such as yourself, climatologists, I mean, lawyers, doctors. I mean, you got everybody, and they're all smart cookies. Now, I want to ask you a question, and I don't know how you'll answer this, but I've asked on my previous radio program, I had a climatologist on that was basically echoing everything that you're saying right now. And I asked him a rather pointed question, but he answered me in the way I kind of suspected he would. I said, do you know of any scientist that might get a phone call from a congressman or a senator that might say something along the lines of, you know, I've got a $35 million Arctic research vessel with your name on it, but we just need you to give us the science we want. In other words, I think a lot of this global warming hype, and maybe the reason the oil companies are embracing it now too, is directly in direct coordination with government agencies that would give them grants, laboratories, research vessels, whatever the case may be, to get the science they want. Does that happen in the real world of science?
I don't think it's quite that blatant, but yes, that occurs, and that you'll lose your funding if you.
Yeah,
if
that's
you
probably even more to the point.
We're not going to find somebody that just says, here's $35 million. You have to do this. But it's pretty much understood that, you know, they're being funded, and they're going to lose their funding if they do that. We've seen that time and again. Dr. Peter Ridd, who's a member of the CO2 Coalition, was an expert, the top expert on the Great Barrier Reef. And he dared to promote and publish peer-reviewed studies that said, no, the Great Barrier Reef is in great shape. Well, you can't do that. He got fired. Susan Crockford got fired for publishing peer-reviewed studies on polar bear populations that are exploding. And she got fired. We see that people get silenced time and again, and they lose their funding. We had a recent professor, PhD, that was up for tenure at his university, and he wanted to become a member. And our chair, Will Happer, who's emeritus professor of physics at Princeton, Will said, "You do not join us. We don't want you. We don't want you coming in as a member. Get your tenure. If you join us, you're likely not going to get your tenure, and it's certainly possible you'll get fired. You'll at least lose your funding, if nothing else." He said, "Get your tenure and then come join us."
Yeah. At least you have So in other words, it's more of a sword of Damocles hanging over their head, more so than an outright bribe. It's basically, hey, you know where your bread is buttered. And if you want this tenure, by God, you're not going to join the CO2 coalition, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of funding out there for this, but it's only funding for this consensus opinion. And it's very frustrating. We are talking, we've seen recent academics walk away. They said, "I'm sick of it. I'm sick of going through diversity and equity training. I'm sick of doing the critical race theory." And I'm talking to two of them today, actually, about joining us as fellows. And, you know, we can provide, we've seen a huge outpouring of support financially from direct mail campaign, from just, it's almost brought me to tears sometimes what I hear from. Well, I'm 82 years old. I'm on a fixed income. I can't afford much, but I so much support what you guys are doing. Here's $50. And our staff, we read these things and they come to me and they say, "Greg, this is why we're here. This is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it, because we want to support we are doing something that's great. We're being effective. And I'm so glad to be part of this group." I'm proud to lead this group.
And what a group it is. I'm telling you, folks, go check the website, co2coalition.org, and you'll see what Gregory Wrightstone is talking about. I know that this is, I'm sure you do get small funding because, you know, this is this mad dash to complete CO2 zero emissions. First of all, that can never happen unless we all stopped exhaling. But secondly, it's destroying small businesses, small farms. It's destroying independent fossil fuel industry. It's destroying everything in the name of hack science, really. It's not even science. It's just agenda-driven politics is all I can come up with.
Well, I enjoy debunking some of these things, and it's so easy often. Let's just go through just one example. The Fourth National Climate Assessment was published, I think it was in 2018, 2017. But in it, they promoted wildfires in the United States as the demon of global warming. And they included a chart that showed, it started in 1983, and it showed this gigantic increase of area burned in the lower 48 states of the United States. But it wasn't sourced or referenced. If you're going to have a chart, you need to source and reference it, always. Right. It wasn't sourced. And I found the source data. It was from the National Interagency Fire Center. And that's all things fire related in the United States, that's where you go. Well, they remember I said it started in 1983 and showed this huge increase in area burn. I went back and looked at it. The NIFC has data going back to 1928. They hid it. They cherry-picked the data. The data show that from 1928 on, for the next 30 years, 20 years, fires burned five times as much acreage in the United States as what we do today. So what they did was cherry-pick the data from Now, why did they choose 1983, you might ask? Good question, Stephen. It was the lowest. It was the lowest acreage burned annually of any year in the 20th century. So, if you're going to start a chart to make it look really bad, you want to start.
You start with the
really
lowest,
low. Right? Yeah. And that's what they did. And you just go, how do these people think they're going to get away with this? And the same thing we found with extinctions. Extinctions are. They're claiming they're increasing at an astronomic rate. They're declining significantly. We can go. We like what I love to do is expose the lies that we have, and it's been kind of fun, and it's really nice working with all these brainiacs. I can access, and these are all. We have volunteers. This is a volunteer-led organization. I've got three full-time staff, including me. And we're tiny, but I have a huge army of volunteers that are PhDs that are part of our effort. And I'm just so proud of what we've done with this group of, you'd think they'd be eggheads, right? You know, PhDs, they're not going to, and they've developed... They've developed this educational initiative that's just amazing, and we're led. I've got this Brazilian artist that can't speak English and I can't speak Portuguese. We've got our intermediary Rafael Nascimento that we go back and forth, and he does the artwork. And I'm trying to learn Portuguese, and he's trying to learn English. We might kind of meet in the middle someday, but it's been a lot of fun.
Okay, well, listen, we've got to take another quick break, but I want to come back. And when we get back, Gregory, I want to talk about the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and maybe East Anglia University and maybe Dr. Michael Mann and maybe Dr. Phil Jones. And maybe you can shed a little bit of light on the hockey stick graph. I know that you know everything of what I'm referring to here. So when we come back, we can kind of dip into that. My guest today is Gregory Wrightstone, Executive Director at the CO2 Coalition. You're listening to the Steve Hook Show. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Previously, I told you about President Biden's nominee to head the Federal Aviation Administration, Philip Washington, a military veteran who is CEO of Denver International Airport. Now, after his Senate hearing some 3 weeks ago, I let you hear how, based on his inability to answer one question after another on vital issues, there was no way this man should be confirmed to the position. Remember this?
What airspace requires an ADS-B transponder? Quickly, please.
Thank you for the question, Senator. Not sure I can answer that question right now.
That's okay. We'll just keep going. So what are the six types of special use airspace that protect this national security that appear on FAA charts? Quickly, please.
Sorry, Senator, I cannot answer that question.
Can you tell me what causes an aircraft to spin or to stall?
Again, Senator, I'm not a pilot.
Thank goodness Washington has withdrawn his nomination after it became evident that he would not get voted out of committee for a full vote on the Senate floor. Washington is black, and in this administration, that's probably why he was nominated. Wokeness can be dangerous. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
How often should you wash your hands?
Maybe around 9 times a day.
4?
Like 20?
Maybe twice a day.
Whenever they feel dirty.
When should you wash your hands?
After you touch some raw meat.
And before starting to eat.
At the beginning, I wash my hands before preparing food.
How would you rate your knowledge of food safety?
Probably like an 8 out of 10.
6 or 7.
7.5? Like, I know the basics, but I'm not necessarily like an expert in it by any means.
Food safety, it's in your hands.
Steve Hook on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right. Welcome back to the Steve Hook Show. And again, we welcome back our guest, Gregory Wrightstone of the CO2 Coalition. Gregory, I must tell you, the reason that I asked this question before we went to break was because when you brought up the numbers about going back to 1983 and using the actual lowest possible number for wildfires in recent memory, and then projecting it forward, you're going to get the desired answer you want. And that immediately made me think of the IPCC, because I think a lot of their climate, and this is the group, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, that really does kind of dictate what the, basically, I guess, UN and intergovernmental panels decide, which is what the world is going to do to tackle this problem. And of course, a couple of the scientists that they relied on were Dr. Michael Mann and Dr. Phil Jones of East Anglia University. And we know for a fact that those two, in collusion with each other, did fudge some evidence. And I just want you to kind of weigh in on that. I'm not asking you to throw your fellow scientists under the bus, but maybe help explain what some people may not know about the IPCC.
Well, I tell you, let me start. A lot of the, in fact, most of the IPCC science is good. All right, you may not want to hear that, but it is.
I want to hear it from you.
It's valid science. It's good science. Where it goes astray, in fact, it's called the Working Group One. That science is pretty sound and pretty solid. But then it goes into Working Group Two, Three, Four, and what they end up with is this what's called summary for policymakers that are written by politicians, and that's what everybody sees. And so they don't see the base data, and they promote this, the summary for policymakers promotes this consensus opinion of catastrophic man-made warming. So, let's focus. We only have a short period of time here. Let's focus on Dr. Michael Mann and his hockey stick. And what there were two problems. Well, no, there were multiple problems, and I'm going to go into this in my next book. Exposing in detail and for the common man how they can understand this, but he said what we do for all these old data. What he came up with was he said that we had seen 900 years starting in the year 1000 AD. From then on, we saw 900 years of gradual cooling, and then all of a sudden, at the beginning of the 20th century, we saw a great spike in warming. And that's completely contrary to many hundreds of years of data from climatologists that have studied this. What most people up until Michael Mann's hockey stick thought was that, well, they didn't think, it was science-based data. We had a great warming period in the medieval warm period, which was the period from 850 to 1250 AD. And then we went into a significant cooling period. It was called the Little Ice Age from 1250 to 1858. And just bear in mind, this Little Ice Age was horrific. It was horrific. It was a period that we had loss of there was an advancement of famine, pestilence, and mass depopulation associated with the cold. And what Michael Mann did was erase the medieval warm period. He erased this. And he did that by using data from what are called proxies. I don't want to go too deep in the weeds here, but he used primarily tree ring data from Southwest United States. And it was the authors of the data set said, do not use this for temperature reconstruction, because what it's doing is reflecting a CO2 fueled increase of plant growth. But he did the same. He went ahead and used it. He also used a statistical method that was, it's just, I'm not going to go into details here. You have people turning off the your web.
I understand.
But it was a horrific method that he used. And just about everything you input created these what are called hockey sticks. In other words, a long, flat, declining 900 years, and then a sharp up stick, which would be the hockey stick. And what we see is both of those just contributed to just a horrific conclusion on his part. And I liked Mark Stein, the acerbic commentator. He said, the hockey stick is wonderful, just has two problems. It's a reconstruction of temperature using proxy data with two problems, the proxies and the reconstruction. He said, other than that, you can take it to the bank. And,
yeah.
And so there are so many things wrong with what he did. He fabricated data. He cherry picked data. He erased data.
He made the data kind of fit the outcome that he wanted to present, and essentially the hockey stick graph was, from now you correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I got this right because I've been on this for a while now. But essentially what he was saying was, look where this graph shoots up. It's right at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. It's right when fossil fuels started coming into play. It's, you know, in other words, I guess back in the medieval warming period, I don't know how many SUVs were on the planet back then, or smokestack industry, but I'd wager none. And Michael Mann just completely ignored that.
He did. And if we look at, as a geologist, I like to put things in the long-term perspective. If we look at, you could make the argument, if you only look at 50 or 80 years of data, we've been warming as CO2 is rising. Yeah, that's true. But if you look in the big picture, it completely falls apart. We've seen that the temperature rise, the modern warming period, started more than 300 years ago. And that was long before we started adding prodigious amounts of CO2 to the atmosphere in the mid-20th century. We also see over the last 8,000 years, there's this thing called the Holocene temperature conundrum. It's where the Holocene is the last 10,000 years since the end of the last ice age. And if we look at this, over the last 8,000 years, we've seen a gradual decline in temperature for 8,000 years, all the while CO2 levels have increased, and it's completely contrary.
And there's the conundrum.
And we look at it through thousands of years, millions of years of data, and we see no correlation between increases in CO2 and increases in temperature. Well, there are, but there are just as many that are just contrary to that.
The thing that kind of drives me nuts about the whole thing is to listen to that side of the argument come at you. They always come at you with the same thing. First of all, they say this is AGW. This is anthropogenic global warming. This is human causation. Now, they don't have any models that can really point to that. They just kind of surmise this. And of course, then this is where the consensus comes into play. But do you believe, I mean, maybe there is such a thing as anthropogenic global warming, but it's gotta be minimal compared to, you know, what we've seen over the span of thousands of years. No.
Right. Well, there is, okay. Let's fuck. There's a 97% consensus argument out there that supposedly the 97%, I would be part of the 97% consensus. Because I believe that CO2 is increasing. The CO2 increase is based and due to our burning of fossil fuels primarily. And CO2 is a greenhouse gas. And as such, it adds some warming to the atmosphere. I agree with that. So do all the members of the CO2 coalition. And but it's a big but, we just don't believe that it's the warming effect of additional CO2 is anywhere near what they're using for these climate models. Most of our experts believe it's somewhere on the range. We talk about a doubling of CO. If you double CO2, how much warming will it cause? And they're predicting 4.5, 5.5, 6.5, 8.5 degrees centigrade of warming for a doubling of CO2. Our research and our physics experts think it's more in the line of somewhere around 0.8 of a degree warming for the, and that doubling won't occur for another century. And and also the big thing here is, if you look throughout history and the temperature history, we find that these other really warm periods were hugely beneficial.
Yeah. Well, in other words, it sounds to me, I'd love to have you back, Gregory. I really would, because this has been a real lesson. There is no massive climate crisis, folks. There's a crisis, all right. It's a crisis in trying to separate you from your liberty. But Gregory Wrightstone, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, go to the website, co2coalition.org, and we'll have you back, Greg. Thanks so much for joining us. God bless. Have a great day. Now you can rest today, my friend. All right, there he goes. I want to thank you for joining me today on the Steve Hook program. Just a reminder, The Reckoning with Timothy Shea is up next. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Hook on TNT Radio. Goodbye.